Are we doing a medley of our hits, George?
We're rolling, right?
Yes, our hits.
All right. I'm going to start this thing while you guys figure it out. Hello, and welcome to the award-winning Ardent Atheist, where reason reigns supreme, not frogs and fish. Today's episode brought to you by billions of years of evolution. Sitting next to me is my co-host and producer, Heather Henderson.
Hi, everybody.
You know Heather from the Facebooks, on the inner tubes, and from our other hit podcast, Skeptically Yours. You can find links to our guest website. Join our Twitter and Facebook feeds. Subscribe to our premium ad-free 90-minute full-length episodes and our email at ardentatheist.com.
If you'd like to take part in the live chat, usually moderated by the author of the well-known blog, Hit and Miss, Joe Swam, go to ardentatheist.com/live and chat us up right now.
That's right. And please go to iTunes, subscribe to our podcast for free, and write a review. Help us get in the top 10. You may also go to ardentatheist.com/premium and subscribe to our premium ad-free content for a measly $10 per year.
Subscribe now or I live for a year with God.
With God. There's no God.
That's what you think.
Oh?
Yes, I have a new boyfriend and he's an Adonis.
Well, that's nice. Hey!
We only have two rules on the show. Rule number one, guests may plug anything they want. We're not hypocrites. Go subscribe.
And rule number two, if you're a listener who's ever been offended by anything, get a sledgehammer and destroy your computer now. This show has no restrictions on language or content. And certainly has nothing for you, you haters. Wow, I don't talk like that.
I said it.
We're coming to you live from E&H Studios in TAM 2014 in the BJ Kramer Suite. Tonight we have Jamie Ian Swiss.
How you doing?
George Robb. Hello. And Pastor Ryan Bell.
How's it going?
You know these fuckers from Showbiz.
Thanks
for being here, right? How
oh my gosh, what is going on?
It's a podcast.
This is a podcast.
Yeah, I see.
That's one of those newfangled devices, isn't it?
Yes.
For the children's, nice.
After we've been on the air for about 3 or 4 years,
yeah.
I'm going to not fall over the ottoman. That's the plan.
You see, you switch it up like that. Mm-hmm. That's how you keep the interest. Jeez.
Suddenly you got 6 more goddamn seasons.
Right, you don't need content, you just need a little trick.
That's exactly
it.
And it's content.
Sorry.
Yes. Somebody's arguing that should be put in the dictionary.
Somebody explain it to George, please.
The dictionary?
Yeah, George.
I love it.
Well, because
I
think cunt, he knows it. Cunt is now in the dictionary.
What do you mean now? It's been in there for like 1,000 years, hasn't it?
Well, no. Actually, cunting.
Cunting.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Hello.
Yeah.
It's a verb.
George Robb knows his cunt.
My lexicographic, body part thingy.
Somebody look up lexicographic.
Is that in the dictionary? I'm not so sure.
Oh, it should be.
Thank you for being here.
No, thanks for having me.
Every TAM, I wish I can get you up here, and I know you're busy as hell. We finally got you.
Yeah.
You're running the whole thing.
I'm top to bottom.
Yeah.
I am the puppet. Pull the string. That's me. That's
you're running the whole thing.
The last time I saw you,
yes,
and your wonderful guitar, you were at this...
is that code?
Yes, it's a euphemism. Podcast awards ceremony.
That's right.
Entertaining us all.
Also in Vegas.
Yes.
Because
is that the one we won?
Yes, it was.
Are you bragging?
No.
This is all about you.
Are you chatting
this is
up?
All about you,
George?
Nice.
You were wonderful.
The last time I saw
ceremony.
You was when I won an award. Wasn't that fantastic? Oh, it was good times.
We've gone to Hollywood. What were you saying?
No, you were just so good at our award ceremony.
Yes, where you won.
Where we won.
Have you won an award? Oh my gosh!
Did you know about this?
You winning an award? Yes.
Did you see his acceptance speech? It was really. It's on Facebook. I mean, YouTube. You can watch it.
We won.
No, you were surprised from what I remember.
I was really amazed.
Yeah.
We won best podcast in the religion/.
Inspiration
category.
Yes.
So inspirational.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome.
That's
to be
right.
An atheist.
You too
podcast.
Can say cunt.
Yeah.
Someday.
Yes.
And the Christians behind us were moaning and groaning and making rude comments.
But that was throughout the show, so it didn't really matter whether you had one or not. They're all over the moaning
I wrote
and
like 5 or 6 different responses to this, and one of them, of course, the obvious ones just popped up. Prayer doesn't work. You know, all of those.
Right.
And what I really did, I went up and organized about 5 pages of stuff and laid them all out in a particular order and then scooped them up and said thanks and walked off.
That's right.
All.
Isn't that funny? You know, you watch award shows and I was like, dude, you should say something better. Come on, you should say something better. Mm-hmm. And then you happen to win something and it's just... Mom, thank you. Lights are flashing. Thank you. Yeah.
They're playing me off.
Exactly.
it's great to have you.
Thank you.
Ryan Bell, by the way, have you two met?
We have not met yet.
We are now introducing Pastor Ryan Bell.
Perfect.
Wow, you have a handshake effect. That's
Come
amazing.
On. Nice.
Ryan, Pastor Ryan is
you
doing
just call him Bastard Ryan.
Whatever.
Pastor Ryan Bell is doing an amazing thing. He's giving up God for a year. Am I saying that right? I think that's
sure,
a good way
like
to put it.
There are about 10 ways to say it. That's one of them, yeah.
Explain this. Like,
I'm just not sure about the amazing part.
Yeah. Listeners, we are going to re-explain it. Now, I've had him on the show like 3 or 4 times now, and we're having him on every show.
They're doing me on every show.
We're doing you on every show.
It's intense. Yes. Exhausting.
So clearly this has been a good career move for you.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And I left my condoms at home.
Oh, no.
When you have no morality, why not? So here's...
Right.
But we are, with apologies to listeners, we're going to set up Ryan Bell.
That's my fault. So I'm apologizing on behalf of
And Jamie doesn't know everything, probably. Okay. Well, yeah, he does. But he thinks
Says
he
who?
Does. Yeah, I know it. So
I didn't come here to be abused.
Let's frame it up for him.
Okay. I was a pastor for 20 years in the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
Yeah, sorry about that.
There were good moments, many good moments, and some stressful moments. Anyway, about 16 months ago, I was forced to resign from by my denomination, the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
Why?
Well,
if you can get into that.
It was a very conservative.
Tell us about the older boys.
Conservative.
Not a Catholic.
No, I wasn't Catholic. In fact, we were very anti-Catholic, the Seventh-day Adventist Church. It's a very conservative denomination, and I was little by little over the years becoming much more liberal.
Right.
We were doing
like women should be allowed to read.
Oh my gosh.
Things like
that. Go to school.
Yeah. Super liberal.
Yeah.
Right. Ooh, heathen. Heathen.
And we're off.
Yeah. And that same-sex couples should be able to be together and be accepted in the church.
Okay.
Read.
And read as well, yes.
Right, right.
And what else? That the earth, as Bill Nye so beautifully illustrated a moment ago, it took more than 6,000 years.
Had you always had these things in your heart, shall we say, and you were suppressing them, or did they come out because of something that happened?
I mean, they came out little by little. I mean, it's interesting because in Christianity, there are these remarkable conversion stories that you hear. Like, one minute, a person was like snorting coke and about to kill himself, and he saw a light and was converted in a moment.
Road to Damascus, man.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
The way it goes, yeah.
But the other process is also gradual. Like, those are rare stories, those sudden moments. And so there was nothing that happened to me. Little by little, you know, I just began to broaden my reading, my exposure to other thinkers and speakers.
Right.
And for years I held a basic belief in evolution, not a very educated one, but just kind of a general like, yeah, that sounds like all the smart people who study that have all agree about that, so I probably should listen to them. But the church teaches a 6-day literal creation.
Did you keep this to yourself, obviously?
I did, more or less. I mean, you know, in private company, we would talk about it. And my general pitch on that issue was that Genesis 1 and 2 was not designed or written to teach us about how the world came into being.
Which album had Foxtrot on it? Was that the second Genesis record, or was that... Oh, the Bible Genesis.
Genesis.
I got the guitar in my lap, so I'm sorry. I'm confused completely.
Yeah, so that was... I mean, I basically was asked to leave for that complex of reasons. And then that sent me on this path of saying, well, you know, I've had these concerns about prayer. I've had these concerns about theodicy, you know, why bad things happen and nobody does anything about it.
But why did you become a pastor? If you had these sort of doubt things.
Well,
I
didn't back
this way
then.
Before. Yeah.
That was 20 years ago that I became
so
a pastor.
Over these
I was
20
a fundamentalist
years.
Back then.
So that you were hardcore from at the
I
start.
I was, yeah,
gotcha.
Very
gotcha.
Much so,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then little
sense.
By little, basically you just make, the way I said it is like this, God, the God container, like when you're young, when you're a child, if you were taught to believe in God as a child, your world is very small. I went back and visited my childhood home and the backyard was remarkably little compared to what I remember. And, you know, so all of your experiences of the world fit easily in what you're told about God. And then you meet some people who don't fit in that container and you think, well, I got to make that a little bit bigger to fit God, you know, fit all these experiences that I'm having into my view of God. And over time, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And for me, one of the last ones was, were gay and lesbian people. Like, do they fit in the God container as well? And many of my friends, including me, were saying, well, yes, of course, even though the Bible seems to clearly say they don't, we feel like they do.
And is it dishwasher safe? That's the most important.
That's really the important one, yes. Yeah. But
fourth album. It's the fourth album.
At some point.
Yeah, I found it.
Thank you.
Fourth album.
Did you ever
God, you're here. It's about time you made yourself
I got to be honest with you.
Until now, I've been unclear on the reasoning behind your presence.
Here's what's really funny about this. I went over to my computer, and we don't have really great internet in this building, you know? And I'm trying to search for it, and I'm thinking, the longer it takes, the funnier this punch is going to be. Mm. And really, it literally just popped up. I had to go to my phone for it. So the failing internet made the timing pretty much ideal.
That's nice. A cute little story. Yeah.
I'm going to kill you later.
Did you ever have any, I don't want to say hatred, but any, like, you know, dislike towards gay people at ever at any time?
No, I never did. Someone asked me that not too long ago, because some people...
There's still time.
That's true. Some people had this really hardcore hostility toward gay people and then gradually became accepting. I don't think I really had an opinion one way or the other. I don't even know that at one point... At some point, I went from not even knowing about gay people...
To sucking dick.
To basically knowing that they were...
Okay, but you said it wasn't an instant conversion. I'm sorry. I may have rushed you off.
Right, exactly.
I may have jumped ahead there. I apologize.
He didn't dive right in. He started basically, with just looking at a glory hole. You know what I mean? Not really...
Small steps, Ellie. Small steps, Ellie. Inch by inch.
Inch? Sorry.
Okay, Emery. Centimeter by centimeter.
Yes. Ooh, oh, I'm sorry.
You went the other way.
Nice.
I was going the other way.
Metric humor. Love it.
Okay.
Metric humor.
Yes.
And this is the point at which, Pastor Ryan Bell is going, I got to get back to the church. I don't know what.
No, he's shrinking underneath the table right now.
So why a 1 year kind of pause? Why not say
that's a great
I'm
question?
Done.
And we've had a couple other people ask that one.
Yeah.
It's a little arbitrary. A year, a lot of people, I think, think of their life in years. You come to the beginning of a new year and you kind of make some resolutions or some decisions about how you want to live your life. And this all came to a head for me at the end of December. So I was having lunch with someone, you know, in the late part of December, and I thought, I know what you're thinking.
It's too easy.
I know. I'm not doing it. We just did it, though. We did it by not doing it.
You have your own director's commentary going on.
It's nice. We are five-year-old boys.
That's available for download later.
You didn't matriculate past seventh grade, did you?
No. I'm so sorry. Anyway,
award-winning podcast. Award-winning.
So you would you would come to a head. Please continue.
I can't. Yeah. Oh Lord. So everything came to a client. No, that's not going to work either. Let me see.
He does it too. He's just a little more finesse.
Yeah.
You're going to hell. You know that, right?
There's no hell. I could have told you that a long time ago.
Well, you know, it's become obvious already to me after getting to know you and shooting so much footage about this. It's become obvious to me that you had picked and choosed like a son of a bitch, man. Religion
or chosen, someone said.
Picked and chosen so heavily that you're. I mean, it's almost like when I ask you to describe the God, the religion, the thing that you believe in, it's just this weeping willow with no leaves left on it. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's interesting.
That metaphor is making me cry.
Well, he's bone dry.
How'd she do that?
What?
We aren't going to make it through this, are we?
No.
I don't
think
we're going to.
No way.
So, the picking and choosing. Were you aware that you did that? And are you offended by me saying that to you? I don't want to be a dick.
I mean, it's not. I understand where you're coming from. I would not have called it that naturally. I would have said that there are context to every piece of literature, including every piece of literature that's in the Bible. Some is poetry. Some is metaphor. Some is. Like, for instance, Genesis 1 and 2 is not a scientific description of how the world came into being. It's a competing creation myth designed to say our God is better than your God to the Babylonians. It was never... I mean, the writers of Genesis didn't have post-Enlightenment concerns like we do. They just wouldn't have even thought about it. They didn't have... their sense of accuracy, historical accuracy, you know, we are very concerned about historical accuracy. Plagiarism, I mean, it's a big deal for us today. And they would copy and borrow and share from people, and we didn't have copyright laws, you know, back when the Bible was written. So a lot of these things are nuanced, and I think what happens is you start off thinking that the Bible is literally God's word, and then you read it and you go, oh my gosh, like, people wrote this, I get it.
Let me slow you down for a minute.
Sure.
Don't lose your train, though. You start, stop it.
I'm picturing the Babylonian lawyer being like, excuse me, that's we have really an fun. Issue with the flood story. The flood story is real. We sort of had that about 1,000 years before you guys.
Objection, Your Honor.
Objection, Your Honor.
We're calling a common usage, and there are just too many characters that are similar, so we're going to actually sue you for the rights to the flood story. We've got the Abyssinian god. We've got that. It's a whole, you'll see our whole lawsuit. It'll be drawn out for you.
Great. Yeah, the word of God is the inerrant, completely accurate word of God. It says it right there in the Bible. So, on whose
does it
not? You hey, listen. You tell
me.
Well,
the moment you say that you're accepting the notion, or we're assuming the notion, it's written by men, written by humans. You're already in dispute with any fundamental.
Well,
belief.
But there's there's a repackaging of that, right? I mean,
Basically the way that, and it's interesting because the Seventh-day Adventist Church is extremely fundamentalist in some ways, six-day literal creation, for example, but they're very moderate in other areas in comparison to some fundamentalists. So fundamentalist Christians in America will say that the Bible is inerrant or literally inspired by God, word for word. The Seventh-day Adventist Church that I grew up in never taught that. They said it's written by people, and you can see the fingerprints of people all over it. It still conveys God's ideas, not perfectly, because who could perfectly convey the ideas of God, but as good as we can do, this is the words that God wants us to know.
How could anybody know a mind of a God?
No, it's true. And even Paul says in Romans, who could know the mind of God? Yes, there you go.
Thank you.
As a pastor, did you find yourself having to ignore certain passages that
oh,
were...
Oh, sure.
That must have bugged the hell out of you to sort of say, oh, well, we're not going to look at John that says, you know, the Word and the Word was God. That pretty much lays it out.
Well, it's interesting because the Revised Common Lectionary, which was developed in the 60s, was a bunch of clergy and religious scholars who sat down and said, what are the Bible texts that the church needs to read in the course of an annual cycle? And they, when you go to those texts to read them, we would in staff meeting read these texts and we would say, wow, it's interesting. Why did it stop here? So we would keep reading. And that was the part where like somebody dies, you know, where God smites them or city is burned to the ground.
The fun parts, yeah.
Yeah, and you're like, wow, it seems so sweet and tidy right up to that point where they stopped the reading. You know?
Right.
So there are these points. And I think, you know, the liberal Christian would say, these descriptions are not, you know, so when, for instance, the worst parts of the Bible, in my view, are the genocides of the book of Joshua, mm-hmm. where it seems that God has commanded the Israelites to destroy not just men, women, and children, but all the animals, too.
Yeah. Slaughter, leave nothing alive.
So just for the record, is that worse than telling a man to kill his own son?
I don't know if it's worse. I mean, how do you gradate worse?
I don't know. You offered the gradation, so I was just checking.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I mean, it's up there with that. Okay. You know, like there's a story about a guy who swears to God that the next person to come out of his house, he'll kill. Because some kind, I forget the context of the story, but he's making some bold, you know, bravado kind of statement. The next person to come out of his house is his daughter.
Right.
And he kills his daughter, and he says
she was asking for. Did you see how she was dressed?
I had to keep my vow to God. Yeah. And I actually heard a pastor give a sermon about that one time, which was, you know, be careful what vows you make because you have to keep them. And I was like, that's the point.
That's
your takeaway from the story.
Right.
Like,
right.
Wow.
So, if I may,
not that God is an asshole.
For sake of conversation, if we so stipulate for the sake of conversation that there was a time in your life when you were wrong about everything, and eventually you got to a point where you were wrong about less.
Sure.
I'm a little confused as to how does this happen? What is your status, I guess, at the moment that you say you're going to live a year as an atheist? But you're not an atheist at that time. You're
right.
Going to live a year as an atheist. So what is the difference? Where do you stand? What is your belief state at that moment mm-hmm. of the first day of that year?
I've been referring to the Dawkins scale lately just because it's handy. Mm-hmm. So if we want to change the parameters, we can do that. But for the moment, what I've been saying is that on January 1st, I was a 3, a weak theist. Someone who, and with the way Dawkins describes a weak theist, and if people don't remember, is just that I don't know if a God exists. I'm really like uncertain about that, but I'm inclined to think there is a God.
This is 3 on a scale of
7.
Have you read the book? In the book, Dawkins makes that scale. Yeah.
So one is a strong theist, absolutely certain.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then agnostic is where he says his view of agnostic, which of course is a huge debate about what that means, is that it's equal probable that there's a God or that there's not a God. Mm-hmm. I mean, Dawkins sets it up that way so that you could never be an agnostic, because it's not equal probable. I mean, it's just the probability. I mean, maybe it is. For some people, it might be equal probable. So that's his position on the right in the middle, number four. And then I would say what I've been saying is that right now I'm a five. I'm a weak theist. So I don't know if there's a God, but I'm inclined to think there's not. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Everybody's working for the weak theist.
Yeah? I think I missed the joke.
Sorry, it's a song.
Lover boy.
It's a song.
Yeah, sorry.
Everybody's working for the weak theist.
No. Boo.
Moving on. Maybe we need
apart from philosophically, what day to day has changed in your, like, you're not praying, I would assume.
Right.
What else has changed? Just practically, not philosophically, but practically. Has anything?
Not much, honestly. And that's one of the great reveals, in a way, is that
were you expecting something different?
Not really. I mean, I already had this deep suspicion that not much would change. I hadn't been praying in that fundamentalist way of saying, you know, God, please give me, you know, a new Vespa, you know, and the boom, there's a new
Hawaii. The Vespa was your first mistake.
I don't know. Why did I say Vespa? Why did I say
Vespas? Are cool, man.
I know they are cool, but Vespas I could have asked awesome. For what I really want is an antique
God
Triumph.
Hears that. God hears that. Triumph. He turns, you know, turns to the archangel and he goes, Vespa, can you believe this schmuck?
He wants a Vespa. Like, of all the things he could ask for,
Jesus Christ. I gave this guy a fucking Ferrari, right? Because he knows what he's doing. He's going to get laid. This guy wants a Vespa.
Oh, well.
So, one of the things that is really stuck in a friend of my friend's craw about this whole thing is that arbitrary 1 year, and
sure.
He and I got to talking at length about it.
What's the problem with the 1 year?
I know, no.
I'm just genuinely curious.
Well, first of all, my friend's complaint or question—it's not a complaint; it's a question. And he's trying to understand.
Absolutely, me too.
And. What I think the problem or the confusion or the weariness about it is, there's no such thing as this. I'm going to spend X amount of time. Doesn't matter how long. I'm going to spend this amount of time, and by this point, I will know X. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or Y.
It's that's so temporary.
Yeah, it is sort of set up to say, like, at the end of the year, I'm going to decide something. You know.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, all of us are wherever we are at that moment. So I guess it's sort of like. Doing a research project, and you're going to do like a longitudinal study.
Right.
And you have to stop at some point, otherwise you'll never write the report, you know? And so you might do a 10-year longitudinal study with these, you know, teenage boys that are going to, you know, you're going to follow them for 10 years and see how they change their ideas about whatever. So I would say, like, what I'm doing is just a one-year thing. Like, I start here, I end here, I end up wherever I am.
Well, if I hear you right, then it sounds like you feel that by that point in time, you will have amassed enough data that you might have some answers to the questions that plague you about
for me
religion. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I think
belief,
a year,
God, all of it.
Someone asked me today, why not a month? And I would say a month is not long enough to do all the reading that I wanted to do and to talk to the number of people that I want to talk to. And
I don't say I think a year is not enough.
Yeah, I'm sure it's not. And I'm you know, I think
but a day might be enough to decide if there's a God or if you think there's one.
A day.
I mean, you're
a day.
A day.
Yeah, because you're pretending. How about essentially, 5 minutes? To rephrase what you're doing, you're pretending. That you don't believe in God, but actually you do. So what would change that, as opposed to making it a pretense, what might happen that you would then say, oh, no, I'm not pretending there is no God. There is no God.
Well, this See, has been that, a long time coming.
Let me stop you there. He just illustrated what a lot of people are having trouble with. And the real answer to that question is buy the book because it ain't that. I think that's kind of it. It ain't that simple, right?
Right.
Am I
no,
wrong?
It's definitely not that simple because I think what I'm saying is that I don't know. Like I lived my whole life believing that there was a God, and I came to the point where I was like, maybe that's the fly in the ointment. Maybe there's not a God. You know, maybe there's nothing there. There's no behind the curtain. There's no wizard. You know, and. And so...
But I know a lot of people who believed in God at one time and ended up not believing in God.
Sure.
And some of them were fundamentalists. Some of them were...
I was a fundamentalist.
You know, well, you too?
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, Michael Shermer, DJ Grothy, Brian Keith Dalton.
Sure.
But I don't think any of them would have become atheist by putting a time frame on their span of the things they were thinking about that changed their mind.
But there was, if they look back, they would say there was a time period where they were questioning.
But it wasn't arbitrary. It wasn't arbitrary. They asked the question and they answered the question. And they took whatever time was necessary to answer the question.
Right.
And that's just, what they were doing. They were answering the question.
Right.
They were never pretending.
I don't think I'm pretending.
Well, you say you're living a year of your life as an atheist, except you're not. Because you're not an atheist. So you're pretending to be an atheist.
I'm trying to get inside of that atheist worldview. I'm trying to get inside of how an atheist thinks about
things.
Well,
there's countless ways to do that. Mm-hmm. But that's a very different thing. To figure out how an atheist thinks about the world
right. Is
a very, very different task than pretending to be an atheist. You say you're going to live your life for a year as an atheist, that's pretending to be an atheist. I never heard of that before, and it does not comport with any story of anyone I know who went from being a believer to being a non-believer.
Well, it's
because they were never pretending.
Yeah. Well,
they were always genuine. They were genuine the day they believed in God. They were genuine the day they thought, maybe not. And they were genuine the day they said, oh, I get it. There's no fucking God.
Well, I think he's not pretending, but there's a title on this experiment. Do you know what I mean?
It seems like it's a parameter.
I don't think he's pretending. I just think that that's what it's called.
Everybody said to me, you're living your life for a year as an atheist. Is that what you're doing?
I mean, I think when I expressed all of that back in December, I didn't know anything about all. I didn't know that there were podcasts. Mm-hmm. I didn't know there was TAM. I didn't know that there was an American Atheist organization. I didn't know anything. I didn't know magazines, books. I mean, I knew about Dawkins and Hitchens and Harris. I mean, those are the things I knew.
No, I understand that.
And so when I said I'm going to live, I probably wouldn't say it the same way today. Like
how would you say it?
I don't know yet. To finish the thought, I was going to say like the journalists who started asking me right away, well, what do you mean? Were the first ones where I was like, well, I don't know. What do I mean? And I think what I mean is that I'm trying to enter into the experience of that everybody that becomes an atheist from being a Christian goes through of questioning their beliefs, questioning, reading the reasons why other people become atheists, reading science, reading philosophy.
So it's a year of being an inquisitive thinking person.
I mean, I've always been an inquisitive thinking person.
You sure?
And it's another year.
Positive.
Right, so it's another year.
Sure, yeah.
Are you catching yourself wanting to pray?
That's my favorite question.
Yeah.
No, not really. Okay. I mean, there are definitely moments where I'm like, especially when I'm in a panic.
And I don't mean like sit down and pray. I mean like just like, oh God, oh Jesus.
Yeah. Or like
in stressful situations.
Sure.
Or wanting to get nuts, not snake eyes or something.
Let's hold hands. Let's actually have a thought. My mom went through this. My mom was going, she was traveling into atheism, you know? And she was hip deep at this point, calling herself an atheist. There was a kidnapping from her house.
Where did you take her?
I don't know anything about it. There was a kidnapping from her house. A mentally challenged girl was taken off by a guy who did a wrong thing to her. Okay, and she's in the middle of this awful storm, and she called me in tears. And I realized how much she felt, at least in this moment, that I had influenced her moves, you know, her motion toward atheism, which I had definitely argued many things with her as over the years. And she said, you took away my ability to pray.
Yeah.
I can't pray. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you can pray. Let's talk about what you want to do.
What does that word mean? What does that process mean?
You can wish.
And we've told the show. We've told the story on the show many times. I'll tell you the quick Reader's Digest version. My girlfriend at the time and I said, let's get online. Let's look for those things that you can find on maps.
Predators.
Let's go find if there's any predators in the area. Let's see if we can do action. Mm. Let's pray to reality, if you will.
Right.
And we did. And she went driving around and honking and yelling for the little girl. I put her into action, that made a difference.
Interesting.
It didn't necessarily at the end of the day. The guy came back and dropped her off. We don't have any idea what influenced that decision, but
God did it.
Is that what happened?
It was the same thing as prayer. It made her feel better for doing something.
It's empowerment.
Yeah.
No, but
there's an interesting parallel here. Like when I was out of college, I had a sort of day job for a while, and I knew I wanted to be a musician full time. I wanted to be a full time musician. I didn't want to have the job selling shoes during the day. no offense to any shoe sellers.
No, no, no. Of course,
I wanted to be.
That's offensive.
I wanted to support my. Well, yeah, I wanted to support myself. You know, with music, whatever that would be. I didn't care what the music job was, as long as it was music and not teaching. That was kind of my sort of thing. By the time I was 25, I wanted to be doing this. Would I consider myself a musician during that time? Yes. Was I a musician? I don't know, but I did put I have 3 years to get to that place that I want to be. There's a parallel.
Metaphor.
There's a parallel. I don't know. I don't know. There's a parallel, though. But in terms of self-identifying and putting a limit, I would say that parts of my personality were always of a musician.
Yeah.
Don't laugh that hard.
Believed you were a musician, but others' beliefs.
Yes, right. Yeah, yeah. Still to this day. Right, right. So how's that working out for you? Yeah.
Sorry, George.
No, but I mean, I think there could be a little bit of, in terms of philosophically, of how you see yourself and putting a limit on, oh, this is the time I have to make it, quote unquote, or to fulfill the criteria that I've
said. A lot of people come to LA and do that. I mean,
sure.
You know what I mean? They move to LA and they want to find.
Right, but this is not a. This is a stretch and a metaphor here. I mean, the analogy doesn't really work for me. We're talking about, you know, your sense of identity. I understand, but I don't, from what I take, I don't take from it that you care at all about, and I don't think you should, about the external identity, how you're identified, but rather it's what you think and believe.
Right.
Which is
I find it interesting that you don't to see this as, you're one of the most. I go to you. I've called you and said, I have some questions about the scientific process right here, because you know it well. And the idea of having questions and then trying to figure out how to get those questions answered.
I'm all for all that.
And I know you are. In a systematic way is the scientific process. I mean, that's critical thinking at its finest.
Absolutely.
And I'm sometimes, oftentimes when I ponder what Pastor Ryan is going through, it seems to me like he has made a commitment to do something that is critically thinking, that's critical thinking and
protocols of an experiment.
Exactly.
Sort of, have been
and just
ish.
And, yeah.
But you've already denied that it's an experiment because you've said, well, it's not like you're making a prediction that you're going to necessarily draw a conclusion at the end of the one-year period. If you said that, that would be more like setting mm-hmm. a protocol of an experiment, right? Within this time, we will make this decision, we'll make this determination. He's already denied that. So
it's an experiment in the sense that I don't know how it's going to turn out, and we'll find out.
Which is how science works.
Experiment, but it's the
science doesn't presume the outcome, but you have presumed... Well, you've said you don't know how it's going to... I'm hearing science Jamie.
Yeah, it's not like a final answer. I don't think I'll have a final answer magically on December 31st.
Right.
How about a final solution?
There are Jews here. God damn it.
God damn it, indeed.
But what would happen? What would it take for you to come to the conclusion that rather than pretending to be an atheist, you are one, or more specifically, what would it take for you to come to the conclusion that there is no God? You don't think there's a God. What would that take? I mean, just imagine for me a situation.
Yeah. I think right now the way I'm approaching that is I'm going through all the classic arguments for and against the existence of God, and sort of checking those against my own experiences, my own intuition, and I'm asking other people how their experience went, and I guess coming to a conclusion based on what I've learned, what I'm learning from other people that are smarter than me in any particular field of study. Like, I'm not going to become a neuroscientist
But the argument in any book against the existence of God that operates from a scientific worldview is not arguing from personal experience. It's arguing a logical conclusion.
Right.
I mean, the idea that a God created the universe is the most difficult, complicated, most hard to believe, illogical, kind of lunatic explanation for, how things started than the Big Bang and evolution. Those things actually make sense. They're much less complicated. They don't have all the exceptions. Mm-hmm. They're logical. So it has nothing to do with personal experience. Scientific experiments have nothing to do with personal experience. In fact, the whole point of the scientific method is deliberately to eliminate your personal experience. That's why you invent double-blind tests and replicable results. So, again, I mean, I was 13 when I figured out there was no God. So,
bragging?
That's great. I'm not bragging. I'm not bragging. I wasted the first 12 years. But
did you start this journey, say, around 12? I'm just curious.
11.
Okay.
Seriously.
But you didn't. You really. I was picking on him. You really seem to be taking exception with the idea of setting a specific point in time.
I don't get. If you're saying, look, I'm a skeptical activist.
That's cool.
And I'm a. Thanks. I appreciate that.
You really need my affirmation.
Means,
that's fine.
Means
yeah.
the world to me. So.
Very pastorally.
I'm all for spending every day of our lives exploring and learning. Mm-hmm. I'm all for that. And if you're saying to me that you're spending every day of your life exploring and learning, and then you happen to, you know, on that giant calendar of your life, mark off a particular random 365-day period and say, I'm also exploring and learning in this period, then that period is no different than the rest of your life. Yeah. And so, you know, I would like to think that if you're particularly exploring and learning about this issue, then you would be studying not your personal experience, about which I don't give a fuck and won't teach anything, but in fact, learning about the scientific worldview and why... 97% of the National Academy of Science members believe, that it's a godless universe.
Yeah.
And that somewhere along the line in that, which has nothing to do with the arbitrary year on the calendar wall, somewhere along the line you might come to that conclusion, right? Or you might not.
Right.
But what troubles me, what I can't get a grip on here, is this. To me, not only the arbitrary period of the year, which you've already said actually doesn't mean anything anyway, but also this notion of living your life as an atheist. This I don't get. I don't believe, actually, it's possible for you to live your life as an atheist, because living your life as an atheist means that you understand, believe that, there is no God. So at best, you can pretend it. Now, I understand that, yes, you can stop doing the things you were culturally trained to do. You can stop praying, which obviously won't make any difference in your life. You can stop going to church. You'll have more free time. Those things, you can imitate in those ways. But the fact of the matter is, if you grab a bunch of atheists, none of them living their lives the same way. They just happen to have that particular idea in their heads in common. So this is what, I can't really grasp yet the idea of living your life as an atheist. This is an idea. This is not...
A lifestyle.
Oh, it's not a lifestyle. It's not a pretend game.
Right.
It's not a game of pretense.
Well, that's part of what I've
learned. So far, you're not an atheist. Maybe someday you will be, and I'd be glad to say to you, in the pursuit of that, in the exploration of that, of pursuing that idea, I'd be happy to help talk to you about it and make recommendations about what I think you should be reading and talking about and thinking about. But...
If this is your hard sell,
but I don't think you're living. I don't think you're living your life as an atheist. You won't begin to live your life as an atheist until the day you realize there is no God.
He's at least mingling with a bunch of atheists.
Yeah, I mean,
That's a good point. And I wonder if some of the antagonism that you're feeling from us is that you are a willing. You've come into the lion's den on a certain level, and. I know that like for me, someone as an atheist is thinking, "Ooh, here's an opportunity to take a few bites out of someone that is willing to sit here, and has the history that you have." Mm-hmm. And I wonder how much that is influencing the negative reaction to what you're going through.
And I mean, the negative reaction began on day one. Like on the first day of the year, Hemant Mehta wrote on his blog, "Pastor goes to live his life as an atheist. He's doing it all wrong." I had been for years told that I was doing Christianity wrong. So it wasn't surprising to me that someone would tell me that I'm doing this
wrong.
Yeah, I'm just wrong. I mean, I'm used to that. And, I was like, okay, cool. Like, this is a learning process. I'm going to give a year of my life to learning what atheists think about the world, science, philosophy, sociology, psychology, all the rest, right? I'm going to spend a year of my life learning about this from books and from other people. And if I'm doing it wrong, please help me, because it's only day one. So I have 364 more days to get it right. So I basically wrote to Hemant and said, help me. Like, I'm not offended by him saying I'm doing it wrong. Of course I'm doing it wrong. It's my first day of, like, I never gave it serious consideration that God didn't exist. Hmm. I questioned the Bible. I questioned the verses that were valid and which ones weren't valid, and the historical critical context of all of those verses. And I had studied Islam and Judaism and Buddhism and Hinduism, but I never really gave a serious thought to the fact that there was a body of people called atheists, and that they were, that they knew one another and talked to each other and had books and conferences and websites and all the rest.
And Jamie's.
And then there's all those atheists that do none of those things.
They
just know there is no God.
Right. And the
they
most,
have nothing in common at all with anyone else who would call themselves an atheist. They don't go to conferences. They don't read books about it. They don't hang out together. They just happen to know there's no God.
Right. And most of the anger that I got from atheists the first week or two was from those people that were like, you know, you're an asshole, so go do your thing somewhere else. And I was like, okay. But there were plenty of people like that who said to me, you can't live your life as an atheist. You're pretending. You're going to go back to being a Christian and then tell all the Christians how stupid and awful we all are. And I said,
they already know that.
Yeah, I mean, and I think
what price have you paid for this in terms of your family, your friends, or are you on your own now? Are they in communication?
I want to add something to that question. We had John Doerr sit down in a chair, and he is an absurdist performer. He goes really crazy, absurd sometimes, and he even warned me, if you shoot me, I'm probably just going to go crazy, weird. And I said, okay, great, let's do it. And right out of the bat, I told him about Ryan and what he's going through, and he goes, I'm not kidding. He goes, I don't understand why anybody would abandon their livelihood. Does he have kids and daughter? Why is he fucking them over? I mean, right? It's really a funny performance. Wow. He got the whole room cracking up. It's going to be great. But and I love that he said that, because a friend Liz said, she goes, that's a question that I think a lot of people are wondering about. You know, that seems really irresponsible.
I mean, I wasn't quite addressing.
I know
from that, but that's an interesting.
But it's another layer of that question.
Layer of it, absolutely. Your question. Right, so right. To George's question.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've lost almost everything. Like by the 5th of January, I had lost all my jobs. Mm. I was an adjunct professor in 3 different schools: teaching bioethics, cultural studies, and theology at Fuller Seminary. Loma Linda didn't fire me, they just didn't ask me back. And but I had an email on day 2 to come in for a meeting in the other 2 schools, and you know, they have faith statements that you have to sign to teach at those schools, and I couldn't sign the faith statements, so that was it. So it was fine, you know. I mean, it was understandable. So I basically had no income immediately. And then I've lost some friends. My friends almost never, I mean, because they're by and large good people, so it's never, I've never come to a face-to-face, like, I hate your guts, I never want to see you again type of confrontation. But it was more just like, they're just fade away and you don't hear from them. Or even on social media, people who used to like and comment on things on my Facebook just don't anymore.
So there's definitely a price that has been paid.
Oh,
but
my God.
Do you have a new social circle, or are you kind of lost? And I'm not being facetious.
Emery's my only friend.
That's so sad. That's so sad.
Sorry. Yeah.
That is so sad.
Right? Everybody all together. Yeah.
But your one new pathetic friend notwithstanding, you know, have you you made a circle of new friends?
I mean,
BJ Crane, is he here?
Yeah. Well, he stepped up.
So, okay, well, I mean, BJ has, you know, came from the Hasidic community in Brooklyn, and he lost a lot. He paid a terrible price and many terrible prices.
I haven't been
family.
Shunned the way that he's been.
He's been shunned, but he has a bunch of new friends, and he's got a better diet, so... you know, there are, but let me ask you another question. What if, can you imagine, let's put you back in the place where you weren't doubting as much as you are, and you were kind of straight ahead and knew what you were doing and good with God and all that. What if someone came to you and your community and said, I'm an atheist, I know there's no God, but I'd like to live a year as if there was a God. So can I hang out in your church? And
wow.
What do you think? Seriously, now I'm asking you to put yourself in the position. Don't you know?
Sure.
Just blue sky this.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the response would have been
from me, or from the church, or
from your community?
We actually had an atheist that was attending our church periodically. Of course, as an atheist, it wasn't like a high priority for him to be at church. But he grew up in the Seventh-day Adventist community, and he moved to LA, and he had some friends there, and he would come by once in a while. We had some great talks. The analogy is actually apt, and the reason that I actually thought of this performative experiment, if you will, is that when people would come to me...
Performative experiment, that helps me a little. Seriously.
Okay. Yeah, so people would come to the church, and they'd be interested in Christianity, and they would say, I want to do a Bible study. And I would say, okay, you know, but Christianity, unlike atheism, Christianity is not just a set of ideas, but it's also a set of practices. It's a set of, it's a lifestyle. Christianity is really about following Jesus. That's why they were called Christians, because they were little Christs. You know, they were imitating their Lord. And so I would tell people, not only do you need to study things, but you need to enter into the experience of being a Christian. I mean, a lot of times Christians will say, I think it's a little bit more of a nuanced idea, but I told people that you can only really grasp the Christian faith from within it. Like, you can't just examine it from the outside.
Like being an atheist?
I don't know. Maybe.
Do you think all Christians who identify as Christians live their lives in a way that has to do with following Christianity? A way of being?
They think they do.
If you could answer for a billion people, please.
No, it's like again the Scotsman. Scotsman fallacy. You know, it's sort of like, well, which are the true ones? You know, and
there's that too. I wasn't going to get to that yet, but I was.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know how. I mean, to me, the no true Scotsman fallacy notwithstanding, there are some people. There is a line at which you're no longer a Christian. Like, you, there's got to be a line somewhere that these are the true Christians and these are the. Otherwise, anybody who claims the label. Represents,
but
every,
no two Christian sects
are the same.
Agree yeah. upon that.
Would your church say get out if an atheist showed up?
No, not at all. Not my church. No. Okay. In fact, that's the whole point of the church is to welcome people who don't believe in God and help them learn.
Indoctrination is an important part of what they do.
Well, it reminds me of the AJ. Is it AJ Jacobs' book, The Year of Living Biblically?
Where
he followed biblical.
He tried to follow.
Similar idea, but it's sort of he did it on his own as opposed to sort of going to a. Did he go to church? I'm not sure.
He's a Jew, and Jewish community and said to the rabbi.
But he's
like,
a secular Jew, and he was
right. He was a secular. He is
was
a secular.
Was that inspiring
Jew.
At all to you? Did you?
Yeah, a little bit.
I
mean, it did cross my mind as I started. I said, like, you know, maybe I'll spend a year as an atheist, and one of my friends said, oh, like that book, you know, and I was like, oh yeah, I guess like in the reverse kind of thing, you know, like what if I? The other way I tried to explain it to. A reporter one time was to say, you know, when you go into a movie, let's say, you know, The Hobbit, you go in to watch this movie, and your rational mind knows that there are no orcs and hobbits and wizards. Like,
wait, what? Uh-huh.
Right?
Oh, no.
Spoiler.
Okay, we're going to take a break right now, and we'll be right back with...
We need to back up and put a trigger warning on this.
Yeah, sorry. Spoiler alert. So... But you suspend disbelief for long enough to enjoy that movie or any other movie in which crazy, weird, fantastical things are happening. Mm-hmm. And then you come out of the movie and you go, oh, wow, it was a great movie. All the while you know there are no orcs, you know, there are no wizards, whatever. So, but you're also, you don't sit in the movie and go, oh, my God, there are no orcs. What is this stupid?
Did you see the movie Noah?
I did.
How did you feel about that movie?
I thought it was fascinating. I mean, I think this is... he took the story of Noah and tried to tell it like a epic poem, like a fable. I thought it was great.
You like the big rock monsters that were with lasers? that built the ark for him?
No, I don't know.
Like, I was wondering how they were going to pull that off.
It was like Transformers.
Like Transformers, yeah.
So this suspend disbelief to go into a movie, we all understand that concept.
Right. So what I was doing is suspending belief. Like saying, and it wasn't a huge challenge to suspend belief because, frankly, my belief was suspending.
You were already kind of headed down this pathway.
Yes,
now,
yes.
You know something I haven't said to you yet? It sounds to me like you decided... and I don't want to you can say, no, that was never in my head. If that's true, I want you to say that.
Sure.
But it sounds to me like you decided to do something in a public way that forced your hand. It sounds to me like you were trying to force your own hand a little bit. You know, I pretended to be in a wheelchair for 1 year. And I remember very distinctly my roommate.
You did?
Yes, I did. My roommate Yeah. My roommate said
it was to get chicks.
It was all you get laid, man. Let me tell you. Jobs. My roommate said, you're not going
to
do this.
You have to learn to sit there and say, but I can't feel it. I can't feel it. I can't feel it.
My roommate said, you won't do this. You come up with great ideas and don't do them all the time. And he kind of called me out on that nature, that thing that sometimes we're guilty of. And I said, get the computer out. And we wrote it up and posted it that night. And that was a commitment to an idea that I had pitched to him and we thought was a fun idea. And I knew if I pulled that fucking trigger, if I hit that send button and put it on alt.comedy.standup, I was in.
And it's actually a great thing because it puts you in the world of someone whose limit has limited mobility, and you would see the world through their eyes. What's it like to try to get into a building that you can't get into?
Yeah, no, the biggest, I'll tell you the biggest. Flying on an airline, going to a gig, I stayed in the wheelchair. Anytime I was outside my house on the way to a comedy gig, that was the rule I set. I set a very specific Bible. I wasn't sitting in it at home. I did at home. It's a comfortable fucking chair. But I didn't stay in it. It wasn't a physical test for myself. It was a psychological experiment. Okay, so I'm traveling to around the country for various reasons, and I'm always using the chair. And that my chair was I ended up with a sports chair, a really cool sports chair. You can pop it and go around and do a wheelie. And
with the wheels, they're angled.
Yeah, they're angled right. Yeah, really fast, really cool chair. On more than one occasion, they're supposed to bring the aisle chair to you and then the gate check for your chair. And so they come down, you transfer yourself. You know, I've built something that is real in the world. It's a guy who can lift himself up and put him in a chair. So I waited on one occasion nearly an hour, 49 minutes or something like that, sitting on an empty plane while they're cleaning it around me. And that was a bizarre experience. And I said to the, I said to the guy that came down finally, I go, you know what time this plane got here, don't you? He goes, yes, sir, I know. You know, it's the airport's fault. And I go, do you know how many times this has happened to me, the first time it happened? And he goes, I know, we really have to work on our system. He communicated to me in his response. It was common.
And you didn't just stand up at that point and go, you know, dude.
Yeah, yeah, I could have.
How did you resist that? How the hell?
Roundhouse kick.
I know, right? I was so psychologically married to this going for a year, you know?
You're a genius. Wow. You're God.
Stop it.
It's a great project.
Thanks. I ended up doing it for 2 years because I got pulled into the Aristocrats, and I wanted to do it to the day. Thank you. And I didn't get the opportunity to exit the bit. Because I was just swamped working on the Aristocrats.
You know, some people, normal
2 years
people,
I did it.
Would just exit the bit whenever something like the Aristocrats came up. He waited a whole other year just because he couldn't exit on the day.
But the real question is, at the end of 1 year, mm-hmm. did you come to believe you were crippled?
Really great.
That's great.
No, I think it's going to take. I think it's going to take a couple more decades for me to realize that.
For you to dawn the reality. Oh, that's so good.
Yeah, it was. It was. I can relate to this experiment because I did one. You know, I certainly connect with the ideas that he's going through, the things he's putting himself through. Now, I'm going to get back to the question, because that was a question initially. Was there any aspect of this forces me to do something?
Maybe.
Sounds like the first stage of death, you know?
I've been writing about religious experience and politics and religion and all of that for a long time, and so it came sort of without much consideration to write about it. It was...
You knew you wanted to turn this into a book, hopefully, right? That was
it crossed
on your mind?
My mind. Yeah, it crossed my mind. My friend was like, oh, you could write a book. And I was like, I don't know. If I write a blog, then all the stuff's out there. I don't know if a book's really a part of it or whether the both could happen. So I don't know. But
are you keeping a journal? Are you?
Yeah.
Are you, okay.
I mean, I'm blogging.
Oh, you were blogging.
Yeah,
okay.
I am blogging. Yeah.
So, that's how I announced it on
the blog. So God knows
blog,
what
yeah.
you're doing.
So God knows, yeah. So God can have
you're
a record.
You're reading a blog. Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
I keep tweeting God, and he just...
A being like God? He can't operate a fucking computer. He's fucking ancient.
Hey, he tweets.
He doesn't.
He
even
does tweet.
He does
tweet.
God,
he
I've
has
seen
his own
it.
Facebook
I've
page.
Seen it.
I think he has tweet minions. I got to be honest with you.
There must be alter egos to God too, because isn't there more than one God tweeter?
I will let you all in on
the other
one.
Is
I'm not going to say what
tweets.
Yeah, there's many. I will say this: I've created an account as God and an account as Satan. I won't tell you where they are, but I've created two nice. Accounts. They argue with each other.
Is either one in a wheelchair?
Neither one. Neither okay. one. That's okay. a whole fifth
so,
account.
Let me ask you this. It's been like 6 months, right?
Yep.
Okay. So, and you're three. You're at three. You're at three on
five.
The scale. Five. Five. Sorry. Yeah, five. Yeah. Five. Five on the scale. And so
okay,
six would be like... little chances of God, and
I can
seven,
help you with
seven. You go to hell. So,
one strong theist, two de facto theist.
Wrong.
Three.
No, keep going.
I got you. Three, leaning toward theism.
Wrong.
Four, completely impartial.
Four. Wrong.
Five, leaning towards atheism.
But still wrong.
Six, de facto atheist. Seven, strong
less
atheist.
Wrong. Oh, figured it out. So, so. But what would change in your life now, from where you are now at 5 and 6 months in, what would be different in your life in any way, in your mentality, I mean, in any way, to if, you know, tomorrow or in the next minute, you something made it clear to you there is no God, what would change?
I would probably alienate a few more people in my life. Probably some people
that
the
universe doesn't care about that.
No. I mean, the universe doesn't care about anything.
Well, there's that. okay, yeah. I mean, I guess that's... Okay, go ahead.
No,
yeah,
I'm just saying, like, the consequences of, like... of saying there's absolutely, I'm absolutely sure. I think, you know, some people are like, well, we were kind of holding out hope for him, but forget it. Like,
okay, I'm not asking about social consequences or what other people think of you. I'm asking for yourself.
Philosophical.
For myself.
Yourself.
Yeah.
You wake up in the morning and you are living in a universe where there is no God.
Right.
As opposed to when you woke up this morning,
gotcha.
You were living in a universe where maybe
there might be
there's a God.
Right.
What is different for you?
I think, you know, the absolute certainty that there's nothing out there would mean that, you know, I'm definitely alone here. I mean, I'm not alone. I'm with all of you. But mm-hmm. there's nothing bigger than me that's mm-hmm. going to save me or any of us. And that
True.
We're, you know, left to our devices.
Yeah, I think the answer to that question is kind of the point of the whole experiment.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
What would my life be different? That's why living as an atheist, like how my life would be different. And one of my early blog posts was, man, I've been doing this for a couple of weeks and really nothing's been different. I still get up in the morning, I brush my mm-hmm. teeth, if I remember.
Because dog doesn't evidence himself in your life in any way.
Right. I mean, there
you
was...
have no evidence except for your personal belief and what other people have told you.
Right. And I think when you believe something like the existence of God or the Bible, then you see the experiences of the world in that context. And so it becomes a kind of evidence for your belief.
But if it turned out there was no God and you were sure of that, mm-hmm. then instead of ever wasting another moment thinking about being saved, you would be absolutely convinced that all the good you would ever be able to do in the world for anyone as well as yourself, you better fucking do before you die. It's kind of cool, huh?
Yeah.
I recommend it.
I like it with the voice.
Yeah, it's powerful.
Yeah.
I know you have songs.
I got a couple tunes.
I want to hear you, but I want to before Whatever. We move to a couple songs, a couple of explanations we're gonna do here. First of all, does anyone in the very small crowd here have any questions they'd like to throw at Ryan Bell? No hands are going up. Okay, so we won't do a Q&A.
That wasn't much time there.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
We also have...
We're going to give you a year to think about it. Come on.
We also have Heather, who is scheduled to go take some friends to Penn and Teller.
Sweet.
So we're going to let Heather slip out of here.
I'm out of here.
I thought exactly she'd never right. leave.
Fuck this crap.
Oh, man, it's so fun.
Thank God she's gone.
I'm worried because,
need you guys.
Because
I might go with her here.
You want to get the hell out of here?
No, yeah, yeah. Woo, it's getting a little warm in here.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you want to find God, buddy, you need to go to the Penn and Teller show.
I've been.
You've seen, right?
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah.
So, in January. Thank you, Heather.
All right.
Have a good night.
Peace out.
Yeah, right. Let's hear it for Heather. Yay. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for episode 153. Another show that went off without a hitch. We miss you, Hitch. I'm your host, Emery Emery.
And I'm Heather Henderson. Our theme music, courtesy of the sound editor, Aristocrats.
Does she sound anything like that?
Yeah, exactly like that. Wilson. I found it indistinguishable.
And special thanks to our recent moderator, who's actually a video switcher here at TAM 2014.
God damn it, she sounds
something
like that.
When she hears that, she's going to leave
Joseph,
your ass.
Joseph, I know, right? Joseph the man, Tam Swam, and our digital publicist and web guru, Cameron the Hammett Tam Winters. Some characters mentioned in this podcast are completely fictitious. Any resemblances to real persons living or dead is purely wishful thinking.
God.
You've been listening to Ardent Atheist. Ardent Atheist is a product of natural selection.